Here is Dr. Bob Hutmacher from University of California, and he'll visit with us about the responses of Pima and upland cotton to irrigation. Dr. Hutmacher, sure, all yours.
Okay, thank you. We definitely are in a fully irrigated location trying to produce cotton out in California. I just wanted to mention, I appreciate the efforts of my co-authors and also the support of the California Cotton Growers Association for the drip part of the project and BASF for some of the furrow irrigation work. In our area, we have a lot of incentive to start looking at ways to cut back on water, partly because of limited water supplies a lot of years, but also because there's a lot of competition for use of water by other crops that people are growing on their farms. So some of the issues with identifying a workable deficit irrigation approach includes things like looking at crop growth stages sensitive to deficit, and then some type of a management approach that involves not meeting full crop water requirements, full ET type of situations. One thing in our location is, you know, on the average over a very long time period, we have about 0 to 30 millimeters of water coming from rainfall during the cotton growing season in this part of the San Joaquin Valley. So a lot of work in the past in California has suggested the most sensitive and least sensitive periods to water deficits, least sensitive being early vegetative growth after peak flowering into bulb maturation, and most sensitive basically revolving around the period of flower bud formation and then through flowering into peak flowering periods. One of the options I wanted to mention just briefly with some studies that we did on terms of how to consider eliminating certain irrigations where possible, and one would be early season water applications. That would be maybe the decision on the first irrigation within the planting growing season, since the plants are insensitive or relatively insensitive early on. And then eliminating late season irrigations if, again, you have a bowl load that's fairly well set up, fairly mature bowls, and either of these approaches may eliminate some possible late and early irrigations. Longtime work from Don Grimes and Jaime Yamada in California did some studies, and they recommended that the highest yields were at about 16 bars, 1.6 megapascals leaf water potential for first season irrigation. But relatively minor impacts with going up to maybe somewhere in the neighborhood of about 18 or 18 to 19 bars. Well, we've done some follow-up studies and showing some results here from a two-year averages of results for upland irrigation, first irrigation decisions that were based on treatment 1, 2, 3, and 4 as you go across, goes from about 14 to 16 to 18 or 19 to 21 to 23 bars leaf water potential. And you can see basically the take-home message is that under either drip irrigation shown in blue or furrow shown in brown, in these two-year averages that are shown, you really don't see too much difference when you take out that first irrigation out to about the 16 to 17 bar, all the way then out to 18, 19 bars. We've seen that fairly consistently in multiple years and in a couple of different soil types. And these are the results, really, which are really quite similar in some work that was done with some Pima cultivars. Pima, there's a little bit of a shift from the LWP, leaf water potential numbers that you see from upland cotton, but again, you could go out to about 19 to 20 and a half bars, really T3 levels shown there on the bars, with very little difference seen really either in the drip or the furrow study in Pima. So fairly similar results to what we saw in uplands. In terms of impacts of delayed irrigations, again, it's sometimes hard to actually translate these delays in first irrigation into water savings. It really depends in a lot of occasions on what type of fruit set, the timing, and whether or not we really have to go for a top crop. But again, it supports the basic concept that we don't need to irrigate too early unless the root system is particularly weak and we can get away with that without having a lot of big impact on yields. In the furrow irrigation deficit studies I wanted to go on to discuss, we conducted some multiple year studies, the most recent ones in 2016 to 18, and basically the treatments are those shown on the bottom half of the figure there, which are race basically boiled down to a large pre-planned irrigation done to refill the soil profile in the upper about 4 to 5 feet. Again, we're in a relatively low rainfall area. And then fairly simple irrigation treatments, pre-plant irrigation plus one irrigation, typically mid-June, pre-plant irrigation with plus two irrigations, and pre-plant irrigation plus three, with those basically turning into June and then adding July and August irrigations for comparison purposes. And what that resulted in is there's data shown here for applied water, soil water use, and estimated ET determined from applied water plus changes in soil water content in an 8-foot profile. And this is showing the data on the uplands for 2016 and 17. The next page will have 2018. And basically what you could see is, even though we have really very large differences in applied water, if you look at that fourth column over there that shows the soil water use in the 8-foot soil profile, we were extracting a really substantial amount of water in really all of these treatments out of that 8-foot soil profile. So what we ended up with was about, in 2016, if you look all the way over to the right, we have about a 6 and a half inch difference from the low water treatment to the high water treatment in total estimated ETC, 21 to 28 inches. In 2017, again, if you focus all the way over there on the right, we have about a 10 inch difference in ET, 19 to 29, and going on to 2018, shown here, again, focusing all the way over on the right, about a 10 inch difference in estimated ET. So very large differences in applied water, a lot of soil water use from the stored soil water profile, and then the numbers that we found, I don't have time to really show in Pima, would actually be about a half to 1.7 inches more water use, which largely occurs because of the longer growing season of Pima. That's usually September, October water use. So what that translated to in terms of lint yield numbers then across these treatments, again, we use six upland varieties and then the two Pima varieties in each of the graphs will be shown over on the right-hand side. They're marked as Pima. Basically, the take-home message for the most part is that the most dramatic across most of the varieties, with maybe the exception of Daytona over there on the left, is that there really isn't a lot of a yield difference that was evident between the two pre-plant irrigation plus two, which is shown in yellow, versus the pre-plant irrigation plus three, which is shown in green. And there certainly is a significant yield reduction in general with only one irrigation and plus pre-plant. Part of it that I put some notes in here is a little too hard to go into all the details. This was a moderate lagus year with a very hot mid-July to mid-August period. If you go that and compare the results for 2017, the same type of study, the same entries, same irrigation treatments, again, you can see in this particular case, we had a year where we had a lot of insect problems. We made many more pesticide applications. The late developing top crop was very important to yield, and that gave sort of more of an advantage to the pre-plant irrigation plus three, being less stressed when you got into the August and September period, because again, some of those top crop yields were then translated into yield improvements. So you could see that difference in separating out the two irrigation versus the three irrigation treatment. And when you get into 2018, this was a few insect problem, very good fruit set, early and mid-season year. And in that particular case, other than in a couple of exceptions in particular varieties, actually the pre-plant two plus two irrigations did as well, or in some cases, not statistically generally better, but was similar to the pre-plant plus three. What that one way of looking at some of these type of numbers would be to look at the yield response in pounds of per acre per inch of either extra applied water, shown as AW versus evapotranspiration or ETC. And for each of the years, I put all the data for each one of the varieties in there, which is some of the variation you see in the graphs. But basically what it's showing is for the pre-plant plus two treatment, there's around about a 75 to as much as about 150 pounds per acre per inch response as an increase over the pre-plant plus one irrigation treatment. and that number drops down somewhat, not as significant an increase as you go from the pre-plant plus three irrigations in comparison to the pre-plant plus one. And I just wanted to put a few things up. There are some micronaire differences that are also going to be interesting to look at, but in terms of fiber length responses, again, the pre-plant plus one generally across most of the upland varieties did tend to cause a reduction in fiber length with very little difference between the pre-plant plus two and pre-plant plus three treatments. Again, in Pima, by comparison, if you look, there really was very little difference and not significant across those different stress levels. And in fiber strength numbers here shown in 2017, again, a fairly similar pattern, not quite as dramatic in terms of the reductions in pre-plant plus one. This was a little surprising again because in this particular year the top crop was important and we expected to see more separation with the deficit irrigation, the most severe deficit irrigation treatment. 2018 numbers here again for fiber length, a similar pattern again with a reduction significantly just with the pre-plant plus one treatment. And fiber strength, again a fairly similar type of response except a shift in Pima. We've seen this multiple times with Pima, and I think some of this is related with Pima to the fact that with more water later on in the season, we just continue producing fruit sites, and we have more immatures in the late season. Last thing I wanted to do is finish up with a couple things on subsurface drip irrigation treatments, which are actually very different. Since we're doing essentially continuous irrigation in those type of studies, these basically we targeted different growth stages and then went with percentages ranging from 60 to 100% of estimated ETC. And again, in a similar matter, what we ended up doing, showing in this graph on the bottom portion, you can see we ranged with a total drip application, not including pre-plant irrigation, of about 18 to 26 in amounts of water applied in the first year, and a similar type of range, 18 to 27. In the second year. And I'll just flip very quickly through the results in terms of what happened in terms of yield responses. And basically, if you look at these, if you focus on treatment three, which is the one that has a little more severe mid and late season stress developing because we're only putting on 60% of estimated ET, that's where we started seeing some significant yield reductions as compared to these other irrigation treatments and timings of deficits. And again, the relative reductions are in the 10 to 15% range in the uplands in year one, and then shown here in year two, again in treatment three. And then the responses in the Pimas, again, yields were a little bit lower in the Pimas, but again, similar magnitude of reductions with that 60% mid and late season amounts of applied water. A little less clear picture, but again, somewhat similar in the second year in the Pima. So in summary then, the deficit irrigation, at least for us in California, I think is an opportunity for water savings that we're really gonna have to be able to deliver on in the future in a lot of annual crops. Impacts on retention and yield really influence the responses that are seen. With deficit furrow irrigation, you can strongly influence the impact by having good knowledge about what to expect in terms of rooting depth and stored soil water. Many of our growers do fairly decent still under both drip and furrow pre-plant irrigations, and that I think is very important to being able to realize some of these type of responses. Deficit irrigation in drip practices more frequent water applications at reduced amounts. Gives you a higher level of control. We do see an increasing number of people in our area going to subsurface drip irrigation. So I do think a number of these type of combinations are things that may deliver on actual water savings with hopefully limited impacts on yield and quality, or at least ones that the growers can manage. Okay, thank you.